This is Jordan Seculo. Today on Jay Seculo Live, what will the Democrats running for president actually decide to run on now that they're heading towards their first debate?
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Seculo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
I mean, we are less than, and we really didn't get to get into this yesterday on the broadcast. Welcome to Jay Seculo Live because of that breaking Bob Mueller press conference, which was his first statement since becoming special counsel. And as he said, he would like it to be his final statement since becoming special counsel. We had my dad on to discuss that as the president's, one of the president's top attorneys twice on the broadcast. So I think we've covered that extensively. So we want to get back into what we really want to focus on yesterday, which is where the 2020 Democrats are going. You know, I know we have a predominantly conservative audience, but I know you care about the elections. And if you're not tuning into MSNBC regularly, you might not see a lot of these individuals or the coverage of these individuals that often. And what are they up to? What are they doing other than Joe Biden and some of the names that have become more familiar in this process, like Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders? We are literally less than a month away from the first Democratic debate. That debate will be, there will be two debates, 2 days of debates, June 26th and 27th. They'll be in Miami. It's by CNN. And it'll be the top 10 will be on day one. And then the second tier candidates will be on day two. There's still a spot open. So there have not, 20 have not yet qualified. There's 24 candidates. Only 19 have qualified to either be on stage one or stage two. And it gets a little complicated if a couple do qualify and then you go to polling and data like that. This is how, when you have this amount of candidates, how it can be very confusing, not just to the party apparatus, but also to the people tuning in. I mean, I'm going to be tuning in. I want to actually see, and I'm kind of interested to see what you think, what are they going to be running on? I mean, the economy is strong. The foreign policy, we're not rushing into wars. ISIS as a caliphate has been defeated. Yes, they still pose a threat. They may try to kind of come back as like an Al-Qaeda group, but they are certainly, they do not control territory. So what is exactly the issue or issues that these Democrats are going to be running on that are going to convince a voter in Pennsylvania or Michigan or Ohio or Florida to vote differently this time around for President of the United States and ultimately down ballot as well? I mean, why would voters keep Nancy Pelosi in the House of Representatives if they do support the Trump agenda and now they've got the president on the ballot, so higher turnout? Why would you keep her as speaker when you want to get things done legislatively, when so far we've gotten a lot done for conservative ideas and conservative policies with that Democrat House that came about in the last midterm elections? We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. I mean, all of you are listening from different states. Some of you are in red states, so you're not hearing as much from the Democrats. But some of you, we know a lot of you listen. Some of our biggest audiences are still in the blue states just because of population. There's still plenty of conservatives there. And I'd like to know from you what you're hearing. Like, what is the issue or issues? Because, I mean, running on impeaching the guy you're going to run against is not really an issue. I mean, that may be a question they all get at the debate. I'm sure it will be. And it's important to know where they are. We'll play sound from you today on those announced candidates who have already called for President Trump's impeachment. But that is not an issue, and kind of bizarre, because if you think that your opponent should be impeached, that should be make your opponent weaker. Like, why would you support that? Why wouldn't you want to just go at that opponent? But again, the pressure is mounting. I mean, and it's mounting on people like Nancy Pelosi. And a lot of this will fall on Jerry Nadler as well. So we'll get into that impeachment politics as well, because that's part of this now as we get into the 2020 race with the first debates coming up and then the caucuses and primaries right after the start of the new year. And you believe it. We're already there talking 2020. We'll be right back taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
You know, during the break, we had a discussion with Dan Bennett, our director of government affairs, on really this whole impeachment talk and the politics of impeachment, which is really what it would be, because you've got House Democrats in control of the House, but Republicans in control of the Senate. So very unlikely it moves anywhere. And what past has shown us is that it benefits the person that the House tries to impeach when the Senate isn't moving on it. And again, when you get this close to an election, what are these candidates, who are they going to be running against if they want to, they want to impeach their opponent, but at the same time, run against their opponent. It's just, it's why we asked today, what issues? Like, I mean, I guess we'll find out some. I mean, I know from Andrew Yang, the billionaire, he wants to give everybody $1,000. For Bernie Sanders, it's free everything, but not really. It just won't cost you at the time you use it because you'll be paying so much in taxes before that it will be paid for already. It won't be free. It will already be paid for by you because of the massive amounts of taxes you will be paying. So, I mean, we've heard just the really only a few candidates that have put out a lot of proposals. I'd say I will give credit, though I don't agree with any of them, to like Elizabeth Warren. She's heavy on policy. Bernie Sanders, he's very clear on where his policy is. Joe Biden has a long record, but certainly he's going to have to come up with, you know, what would it be for the future, not just his record, which is also facing scrutiny from Democrats. So, you know, how's he moving forward? What is distinguishing? You know, what is going to turn that? I'm not talking about the labor union bosses. They're going to be behind the Democrats. But the labor union worker, the blue-collar worker, the middle-class American also. So you talk about the why would they vote for one of these individuals? What issues are they going to put forward to vote for one of these individuals if the country remains on track this way? I mean, I think once this tariff issue gets resolved with China, and the stock market has still been very high, people's 401ks are still doing much better than they were years ago. The economy is still moving at a very quick pace. Hiring is up. And again, I think the China issue will solve itself. So what do they run on exactly? And I think that's where we want to take your calls, your comments, 1-800-684-3110, giving you this opportunity to really focus on the Democrats, where we, again, focus a lot on conservative issues here and policies. We know who likely Republican candidate will be, and that will be Donald Trump. So again, you can kind of put everything we talk about and then transpose it to, okay, well, how will that really differ from President Trump, who is a unique Republican as well because of his appeal outside of just the traditional Republican base. Let me go to this question that came in through Facebook, and I'll go to Than on this, then we'll get to some of your phone calls. Bonnie on Facebook wrote in, how difficult is it to defeat an incumbent president when the economy is booming? I mean, Than, history has shown it's always difficult to beat an incumbent president, but it can be done. So it was done by Bill Clinton. He beat George H.W. Bush. The economy was pretty good, and we had just had a successful military operation in the Gulf War.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly difficult. I mean, history shows that except in a time of war, Jordan, or when the nation is under attack, the economy consistently polls as the number one issue for voters leaving the polling booths. If their pocketbook is doing well, they typically vote for the incumbent to retain his or her seat. If it's not doing well, they don't, Jordan. I think it will be very difficult for them to win. And honestly, I think it's illustrative of the point that you just made about the legislative track record for some of these members who are running for the Democrat nomination. Because, Jordan, I think they're going to try to run in the Democrat primary on issues that are going to be running in the face of a strong economy, issues like the Green New Deal. And I think the evidence that they know it's going to be an uphill climb in the general election is the fact that when that piece of legislation came before the United States Senate for a vote, Jordan, none of them were willing to vote for it. I mean, even Elizabeth Warren, who I think you rightly gave credit for being policy heavy, having a lot of ideas, Jordan, this is right in her wheelhouse. This is something that she has advocated for a long time. When she had an opportunity to vote for it on the floor of the United States Senate, she declined to do it. She voted present. Why did she do that? It's because she knows that that would be a way electorally when it came to running against a president in a strong economy.
Yeah, I mean, so they're going to, again, they're going to run on these ideas that they won't even vote for when given the opportunity. Even when it was a broad kind of, do you support the Green New Deal? They didn't want to vote for that. But yet they're going to run on a Green New Deal. And when Bernie Sanders was asked about how to pay for Medicare for all, he doesn't have an answer for it. I mean, this is a guy who's already run for president once, did pretty good. I mean, almost beat Hillary Clinton and beat the party apparatus, which is says a lot. But he did not ultimately succeed in doing that. But he is the second place candidate right now. I think he will probably keep that spot throughout much of the campaign, unless he is surpassed by someone like him, but maybe a newer version, if you will, with better answers to questions like this, like, how are you going to pay for Medicare for all, Bernie? Take a listen, bite eight.
Asking a fair question. How do you pay for them? Well, what we have chosen not to do, because it would just engender enormous debate, is to tell you how I'm going to raise every nickel in a $3.5 trillion budget. That's something that is going to have to be discussed. So I wanted to lay out the program as to what it would mean.
Than, I mean, to me, this is a jaw-dropping moment. You can't get away with comments like that if you're a serious candidate for president, which is why Bernie will probably always be a second and third place candidate, is because you can't put out programs that cost $3.5 trillion and say you're not going to tell people how you're going to pay for it. The answer, we all know what the answer is. He doesn't want to say it. It's incredibly high taxes, not just on individuals, but corporations that will affect employment and affect jobs numbers. And again, it may be impossible to even get through Congress.
Well, I chuckled when you played the sound, Jordan, not because it was funny, but because it's painful. I mean, the honest answer to that question is it is so astronomically expensive to pay for a proposal like that, that quite frankly, he can't raise taxes high enough. I mean, I think what he would end up having to do is having a compromise program where he didn't get all of the giveaways that he wanted and still raise taxes to a level that Americans would not tolerate. Jordan, if he put out an accurate study, or at least as close to accurate study as you could get for how expensive that would be, and then was honest, actually said what that price tag would be, Jordan, his support would plummet. So the answer to that question was just one that he was not willing to give.
No, I mean, and this is, again, typical of when they get into the debate situation, they're going to get pushed. They're going to get pushed by their colleagues, you would think, on the stage, unless they don't have an answer for it either, and they support Medicare for all. So I mean, that's kind of the question, too. We have actually a question coming in about just that, which is Linda from Oregon on line three. Linda, who is in one of those states that can, especially in Portland, that can certainly is surrounded by a lot of those on the left, but it's a great city, and there's a lot of conservatives there as well, just kind of maybe outvoiced oftentimes. But Linda, you had a great question. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I want to know, Jordan, from you and Than, during the debates, I'm wondering what they're, I know that they're, you know, they've always been running as a pack against, and I mean PACK, against Donald yeah. Trump. But what do you think, do you guys think that, are they going to go after each other? I mean, are they, at some point, they're going to have to break away if they're going to even have a chance against him, but it seems like they haven't been able to do that yet because they're so focused on getting him out that they really don't, you know, I just wonder what you guys think that is going to happen during the debate.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Linda, from my experience, I remember working on the Bush campaign. It was the last time that this was really utilized by a presidential campaign. It was John Kerry's campaign, and they put out this anybody but Bush. As to try to rally people behind John Kerry. It was not that popular, but still, I mean, he did fairly well in the vote because we're a pretty divided country, but so it was anybody but Bush, and it didn't work because you have to get behind one of the candidates. The American people, at least 50% plus one, have got to get behind one of these candidates, and that means, Stan, they must distinguish themselves. They cannot just get up there. I mean, maybe in one debate they can just get up there and bash Donald Trump, maybe. But I mean, somebody's got to start calling each other out and distinguishing themselves for policies. Now, they could do that in nice ways and say, listen, I know how I'm going to pay for Medicare for All, unlike Bernie. Or I know how we're going to do the Green Deal, unlike Cory. You know, things like that. I mean, they can handle it in a nice way. It can start kind of gloves on with the battle, and the gloves start coming off in the later debates. But there's got to be one or two in there that are ready to throw punches, usually. And Joe Biden is one that typically, even if he doesn't sound like it, ends up doing it.
Yeah, it's a great question from Linda. Jordan, I think the only moment of unity will be the bashing of Donald Trump. They might get through the opening statements on that, but after that, they're going to start going after one another. I mean, Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg already have track records of this in the campaign. Eric Swalwell, I would say even Bernie Sanders. Jordan, it is not going to take very long before each of these candidates are going to look for an opportunity to distinguish themselves, not from Donald Trump, but from each other so that they can be the one that takes him on. I wouldn't give it past the opening statements. I'll say that.
Yeah, I mean, here's the candidates that have qualified: Biden, Booker, Bullock, Buttigieg, Castro, Delaney, Gabbard, Gillibrand, Harris, Hickenlooper. I can't even get through this before we get to the next break. We'll go through who are the 19 candidates that have qualified for the first Democrat debate in June. As Stan's mentioned some of those names, we'll take your calls when we come back on Jay Sekulow Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Some interesting data. I wonder if we get some of that for the radio audience. There's some interesting poll data in there about where Donald Trump stands today versus where he stood as a candidate the first time around, and where the polling showed him basically having no chance, no path to victory. Until I remember on this broadcast, it was about 3 days before the election. I think it was the Friday before the Tuesday election. I said, you know, I think something has changed. Something has significantly changed. It wasn't just the Jim Comey stuff. It was the Rust Belt coming out with 25,000, 30,000 people over and over and over again. And we were just playing this clip, and the president, again, at these rallies, still getting crowds like that, still getting support like that. That is how you get people who talk to their friends and family, who make sure they vote on Election Day. And again, I don't want to focus too much on President Trump today, because we're focusing on the Democrat race, or who's going to take him on. But I think that you could keep making those comparisons about the difficulty they face at a time against a candidate they thought they had an easy path to victory against in 2016, that Hillary Clinton did not take seriously enough. Than, there was also, I wanted to just mention, there's a passing away of a U.S. Senator, Thad Cochran, as well, who worked on a lot of issues we were cared about and was involved in, and just to acknowledge that as well.
Yeah, Thad Cochran, he served 40 years, Jordan, wow. 4 decades in the United States Senate as the senator from Mississippi, chaired the Senate Appropriations Committee, so as you can imagine, was at the center of a lot of controversial issues. He was chairman of the Appropriations Committee when the whole Tea Party movement came in, so even though he was a very conservative senator based on track record, obviously there was some controversy during that period. But look, 4 decades serving the state of Mississippi and his voters, he has passed on. He served in the Senate until 2018. He'd had some health complications, which caused him to leave the Senate. He has passed on. I know a number of his colleagues are going to be speaking about him on the Senate floor next week when they return, but certainly appropriate to remember him today.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, someone, you know, when they serve 40 years in the U.S. Senate, you know, they've got the trust of their constituents. They understand the process. It's why I'm not someone who's so much, you know, when it comes to term limits and things like that, I think that there is a role and a place for those who have served. I understand, like, that swamp effect, but that's more of the bureaucracy. I think that there is a role for having long-term members of Congress who understand the processes and can help guide the newcomers who may have great new ideas through all of those processes and all the procedural hurdles. And again, it's up to these constituents too. Sometimes people term limit themselves. I have no issue with that. Beto O'Rourke may be rethinking term limiting himself. Maybe if he spent a little bit longer in the Congress and made a name for himself instead of being kind of a no-name backbencher in Congress, which is interesting considering how he's been played up, you know, through Vanity Fair and these other things, spending time there and really playing a role as a senator to help move things forward, I think is very important. So, again, our thoughts and prayers with Senator Cochran's family. We go right back to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Here's an issue. I wonder if any of the Democrat candidates will actually directly address in a way that will satisfy Layla, calling in from California on line 5. Layla, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi. Thank you so much for all the hard work you and your family do for us. Yeah, my problem is, number one, living in California and witnessing myself, illegals being bussed and dropped in Temecula, Marietta, that's where I'm from. It really scares me. None of these candidates even care about our security. They don't, and I think, to me, it's just pure voting, because it happens in California a lot, illegal voting. So that's my number one. And none of these candidates are even, like, 1% of the issue of our borders, our safety, our sovereignty. That's my number one And heads on, I will vote for Trump again. So
yeah.
I don't know, what can we do about...
Yeah, well, I think that, Layla, they're going to get questions, certainly, Than, in Miami, the debate. Though Miami's not a huge place where people aren't border crossing, there's a huge migrant community there from South America, so it plays a real role. Usually those are people coming legally, fleeing because of like issues like in Venezuela, and in the past, you know, where there was Cuba. So there's these waves of immigration, but Miami is used to that, and the debate being there, I think, signifies that, how you can have that immigration in a legal and lawful way, and people really do. They have created this incredible city where you've got very vibrant with all these different communities, but still proud to be American. And yet, I do believe that there's no way that the debate questioners are going to ignore this issue. Many of them have been to the border, Than. They've seen how horrendous it is. They're starting to change their minds. So I'm wondering if they'll ask, okay, hey, if you don't support a wall, what do you support? And how are these candidates going to answer that?
Yeah, I think the question is going to get asked, but I fear, Jordan, that there's going to be a canned response from each candidate. Because first of all, think about all of the senators who are running. How in the world are they going to answer that in a substantive way that convinces voters that they care about the southern border, when they have done nothing but oppose the president, and frankly, not just the president, anyone who has put forward a plan for border security? All of those senators have just strictly been trying to block that, Jordan. So I don't think there's a substantive answer that they can give. I would tell you that I think when you see these candidates travel across the country, maybe not at the debate stage, Jordan, but travel across the country, I hope that voters will bring these questions, the question about border security, to them in a real way, especially for someone like Kamala Harris. You know, maybe the other senators can't answer this because they've done nothing but oppose this. But Jordan, from her time as a prosecutor, surely she knows the importance of this issue. But look, I think if you look at the last couple of weeks on how she's answered this question, I think she is going to try to continue to dodge it. I would tell you the question is going to come up at the debate, but if we're going to have a chance to get a real answer, I think it's actually going to have to come from voters when they're out on the campaign trail.
Let's go to Cole in San Francisco on line 3. Cole, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks, team. I appreciate all you do. What I'm noticing when I'm listening to the radio news feeds is I'm getting nothing from the Democratic side about what their platform would be. What the one thing that keeps coming up over and over and over again is the whole thing about the Mueller investigation.
Yeah.
Nancy Pelosi, she's very, very highly played on the radio constantly, and so I don't see any clear platform.
It's interesting because Nancy Pelosi so far does not support impeachment. I mean, she's got a battle on her hands. She's facing a lot of pressure. There are a number of announced Democrat presidential candidates. They will all get asked this question at the debate. They will have to answer it. They don't have to say they support impeaching the president, but they're going to have to answer it, which will be a big moment for their liberal base. But take a listen just quickly. Here are just four of the declared candidates. All four of these have qualified for the first debate, tier one level debate, Byte 14.
I believe Congress should take the steps towards impeachment.
I think he's made it pretty clear that he deserves impeachment. I'll leave it to the... But I'm also going to leave it to the House and Senate to figure that out.
If you've actually read the Mueller report, it's all laid out there. It's not like it's going to take a long time to figure this out.
The only way we're going to get answers now is to move forward on impeachment. It's the only way you compel the documentation, the testimony, the truth, the facts.
Cory Booker's also tweeted that there should be impeachment, so you can add him. You heard there Kamala Harris, Mayor Pete, Elizabeth Warren, and Beto O'Rourke. Amy Klobuchar said it's on the table.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
You got to like when one of the... And listen, I'm someone that can have a name. If you're not familiar with Sekulow, you can imagine how many interesting ways I get my name pronounced back to me when I travel around the country or just you know, anywhere, any day, not even around the country, just in my hometown, people kind of guessing how to pronounce. So I get that. If you've got a last name like that, Bennett is a little bit easier, you know. Than could get. I mean, you know, the Than that could come out many different ways. But you know, like Mayor Pete, when you've got on your Twitter account a way to pronounce your last name, which actually isn't the way to pronounce the last name, but it's the way he kind of likes it for politics, which is the boot edge, which is like the edge, and they're putting that in on shirts. When it's really more like Buttigieg, which is how, again, his husband has said it should be pronounced, which is a Buttigieg. But yet his campaign is putting it as Buttigieg and with the edge shirts. I mean, it makes it kind of, do we have that bite from President Trump talking about, I mean, all these candidates? It's just unique. You have to have moments of lightness when you talk about all these serious issues, like who will be our commander in chief.
I got boot edge. I got them all. I got Beto. Beto's falling fast. What happened? I don't know what happened to Biden. And Bernie, you know, Bernie's crazy. Bernie's crazy. But Bernie's got a lot more energy than Biden, so you never know. Boy, you got some beauties there. 350 million people, and that's the best we can do.
I mean, man, it is unique. He's talking about, you know, the population of the United States, and this is the best the Democrats can put forward, is an old socialist, a guy who's run for president multiple times, a VP to a popular president, but never had success as a presidential candidate. Still not really polling above 30%, not like way ahead of anybody. That's Joe Biden. Beto O'Rourke, who has, again, served a few terms in Congress as a someone who did not make a mark at all during that time. Had a kind of rise and fall, like the president said. You got a 37-year-old mayor from South Bend, Indiana. Kamala Harris, who started out in the number one position, but has faced a lot of backlash from the left. I mean, it is interesting that, again, with 24 candidates announced, I don't look at one of these yet. I mean, the only person that's got like a lot of serious background in politics, it would be Joe Biden, who I think can throw punches similar to the president, but I think he's shown in recent weeks he may not be quite on game yet.
Well, first of all, on pronunciation, Jordan, I still have colleagues here at the ACLJ who call me Thane. So, and I've been here for 13 years. So, you know, you've got that. And then on Pete Buttigieg, I've massacred that last name so many times that I'm going with Mayor Pete from now on. It's Mayor Pete for me.
Yeah, I think so for me too.
As far as distinguishing between these candidates, clearly it would be Joe Biden that would have the opportunity to do that on track record. But Jordan, I'm going to be real honest with you. I think we are in an era in politics where that actually is going to work against him in the primary. I mean, I'm not saying he's not the front runner. Clearly he is. If you look at the whole profile, you would rather be him than any other candidate. But Jordan, I won't be surprised at all if he actually has a hard time defending those decades in service, because it's going to just splice so many different ways. And someone like Mayor Pete, who can come to the table with maybe less to draw from, might be able to eat into some of that support. So, you know, traditionally speaking, I think 10 years ago, you'd look at the profile of Joe Biden and think he was going to win this nomination. Today, I'm not so sure.
You know, it's interesting. There's going to be 12 sanctioned DNC debates. So they begin in June. It appears that almost all of them are going to have to feature back-to-back nights until people start dropping out, which may not be till very late in the campaign. So two-night debates. I mean, that's going to be pretty unique as well. Not that kind of earlier in the day and then later in the night. So again, 12 sanctioned debates so far from the DNC beginning in June. The first caucus and primaries are in February. Iowa goes caucus. New Hampshire goes primary, so it begins in next year. The actual voting begins, but you've got 12 debates. We come back, we'll tell you who's qualified for Tier 1 and Tier 2 of the first debate. There's 19, so there's still one remaining. still one remaining out there of the 24, of the five of the 24 could get in.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Taking your calls on politics. We've been taking calls throughout the show, so we've opened up some lines. 1-800-684-3110. The big question is, what will these candidates actually run on? Like, what is the issue that they're going to run on? I mean, if you're going to run on Medicare for all, but you're like Bernie Sanders and we already played it for you, and you're not going to tell people how you're going to pay for it, well, that doesn't go very far in a debate. If you're going to run on a better economy, how? I mean, how are you going to have a better economy than the economy we have right now? Especially if by the time that's really being questioned, this whole issue with China is settled, which I believe it will be. Once that is, the stock market's going to rocket even more. I mean, so the president is a business person. He's trying to get the best deal possible. Sometimes that takes time, but I do think that will get resolved. Here is an interesting fact for you, numbers-wise. We played this for people on Facebook and Periscope during one of the breaks, but I wanted to read it to you on some statistical analysis about the likelihood that the president and where the vote will end up based off the economic model, which is really the only model that was correct back in the last election cycle. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Ray Fair from Yale's model, which is the economic model, states, quote, Trump's vote should end up at about 54%. His Democrat opponent is expected to only get 45%. That is based off the Yale economic model for presidential elections. The American University professor, Alan Lichtman, he was one of the few political prognosticators in 2016 who predicted Trump would win. So he was an outlier. He's come to the same conclusion as well, that that the Yale model, the economic model. So this is, again, it's very different when you look at exactly where President Trump stands. Now, he stands differently, too, when you're running for re-election. He's not the kind of underdog anymore, though I think, in a sense, he's kept that status. He's still with the American people because he's fighting back against Washington. So while he may be commander-in-chief and president of the United States, he's still got a lot of Washington bureaucrats pushing back against him, pushing back against his policies, fighting him every step of the way. So in a sense, he is still in the process, in the middle of draining the swamp, remember. And again, so we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. This is the – I'll let Than tell you the candidates – who have not qualified for the first Democratic debate in a moment. Here are the candidates so far who have. There are 19, so there's 20 spots available. There'll be 2 days of debates in June 26th and June 27th, a Tier 1 and Tier 2 debate on two different nights. Qualified candidates, so these are candidates that already have qualified. Joe Biden, Cory Booker, Bullock, Buttigieg, Castro, Delaney, Gabbard, Gillibrand, Harris, Hickenlooper, Inslee, Klobuchar, O'Rourke, so that's Beto, Ryan, Sanders, Swalwell, which his entire campaign is on impeaching Trump and taking away guns. I mean, literally, that he'll look at his Twitter account. That is his entire campaign. Elizabeth Warren, Williamson, and Yang. Andrew Yang, of course, is the everybody gets $1,000 a month candidate who is coming out of the he's a billionaire and coming out of the venture capital and tech world without political experience. I will be honest, some of those names I have to think a few times about to even recall who they are, and yet they have qualified, Than. I'm imagining for a lot of people out there, we may have to remind people too, like when we're talking about Bullock, who is that?
It's the former Montana governor.
Former Montana governor. Delaney?
John Delaney, I believe that was the former, is that the former Colorado? No, that's Hickenlooper, is the former Colorado governor. Delaney, I believe, is a congressman, if I remember correctly.
I mean,
I'm not 100% sure.
And these are people who qualified. That's the thing. These are the people who qualified. Now, Than, let's go through the list of people who have not qualified, because some of these, well, I guess one of them, are two of them are names that people may have actually heard of.
So Delaney is a former congressman from Maryland, for the record, but that by process of elimination, the five that leaves that have declared but have not yet qualified, Jordan, Senator Michael Bennett from Colorado, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, former Senator Mike Gravel from Alaska, Mayor Wayne Messam from Florida, and Congressman Seth Moulton from Massachusetts. The interesting thing there, Jordan, I would wager that at least Michael Bennett and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio are going to be able to meet that threshold, because that's a very low polling threshold. And both of them, I would think, would have a significant enough apparatus to be able to clear that measure. So if that happens, Jordan, that would bring the list of qualified to 21. And then you'd have to start factoring in a donor threshold, and then you'd have a tiebreaker based on polling. So we don't have to go through all of those machinations, but I think you're going to get to at least 21 who qualify initially for 20 spots.
So you get to 21, and then you got a mess. You'll get your mess in your hand. And you think those will be de Blasio and likely Bennett as well. And then between those two, probably Bennett would be the favorite in that kind of runoff, because you have more of the national kind of fundraising apparatus as a senator?
Well, if I'm understanding it correctly, Jordan, it wouldn't just be those two running it off. Then I think you would go to a mix where those who have reached both the polling and the donor threshold would qualify first, and then you'd take everybody that only qualified on one of the criteria, and it'd be a tiebreaker based on an average of the last three polls. So if it comes down to splitting hairs like that, I'm not sure who's going to end up getting left off. Probably one of those lesser-known names, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very interesting to watch how that process plays out, and we'll, of course, cover that. It's interesting, we're talking about polling. The Washington Examiner has a new poll out from Quinnipiac University on Tuesday. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is polling at 0%, yet has the highest unfavorability rating among the more than 20 Democrats running in the 2020 presidential election. So, Than, he's not running like no one knows who he is. He's polling at 0% with the highest unfavorability rating. I mean, this is like when you think, maybe I made the wrong decision. I should focus on running the city of New York. Big
Nothing
job.
Nothing like an announcement bump. If you get an announcement bump that takes you all the way to 0% in the polls, but you're leading in unfavorability. Look, I don't think he's going to be the next president of the United States, Jordan. Just going out on a limb here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very interesting to see. It would be interesting to see into the minds and also their advisors. Like, why do they think this is a good idea? If you've already gotten to like mayor of New York, like that mayor or not, you know, these are high profile positions. Maybe it's not your time when there's 20 other people that have announced. And when you're the former governor that was not really well nationally known, maybe you got some wild card shot. Maybe you're trying to get on the cabinet. I mean, there are other plays at this, obviously. But when you get to 24, you're usually just causing the party a mess. It's actually just because you're dividing up the party. Then you got to unite people back again. And so the big question for me, and I'll go to your calls soon, but the big question for me is there a unifier in this group who, once this is done, can bring the left together with the middle, if there's much of a middle left in Democrat politics nationally when you're talking about presidential politics? Is that Joe Biden, really? I mean, is he going to be able to play that role? Bernie Sanders can't play that role. He's not going to bring in the moderate Democrats. So, or is it going to be someone else, one of these others that, again, has not yet risen to the level or has fallen and trying to relaunch? And they're going to have a chance on the debate stage to try to make another name for themselves. This is very early, so a lot can happen. But it's never good when you're starting at 0% with the highest unfavorability rating of anyone. Let's take a phone call. Let's go to Amy, who's in New York, a state where you've got Democrat Governor Cuomo. He's not running, interestingly enough. Actually, I thought there was a talk about him running. Instead, the New York City mayor running. But Amy, you're on the broadcast.
I am in New Jersey, but we have another governor that's a problem, Murphy. But, you know, it's very upsetting because I'm echoing the other caller from California, because I don't feel like I'm reaping the benefit of Trump, because we have these resistance people here. We have gun grabbing. We're trying to recall this governor. They want to get Trump off the ballot. And my concern is we're not reaping benefits. There's still, Florida got rid of Common Core. They let the teachers carry guns. My daughter's school guns goes on lockdown, and they don't even tell me. And they don't even have anybody protecting the school.
Well, so, I mean, this is what's happened, Amy, unfortunately, is that, and again, I'll try to let you talk some more, but is that a lot of the policies that put in place are, they benefit the states that have the apparatuses ready to benefit from these policies that President Trump has. But if you've got really high taxes, or you're resistant to everything, like you said, Amy, you get put in your situation. So as you said, Amy, you just don't feel the benefits of it, which is exactly what the Democrats want you to think, is that, see, Donald Trump's trying to hurt you. But you realize the truth, Amy, that it's the leaders of your own state who are not letting those benefits get to you. Amy?
That's why we're recalling Governor Murphy.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, this is informed voters understand that. But all voters are not that informed, especially in presidential elections. So they think, wow, they call you out these policies that are great for people. Why am I not feeling this? A lot of times it's blame your state leaders, blame your city leaders, but state leaders as well, especially in those blue states who are like blocking the good effects of the Trump policies. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Final segment. We take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Interesting piece, and I'm going to get right to the phones. If you want to get on the air, you better call right now, 1-800-684-3110. This is a piece, it was in The Hill, on, and again, The Hill covers Congress, so legislative work, and it talks about the 2020 Democrats and their very thin legislative resumes. What's interesting, though, is that we'll start here. In 6 years in the Senate, Senator Elizabeth Warren has introduced more than 150 bills and dozens more amendments. More than a dozen of those measures are now the law of the land, but in a reflection of the way Congress does business today, not a single one of those bills that were signed actually carry her name as a chief sponsor. And she's not alone. In the crowded presidential primary, directly quoting from the article, in which 16 of these candidates out of the 24 now have a combined 181 years of legislative experience, Democrat candidates have thin legislative resumes. Neither Senators Kamala Harris or Kirsten Gillibrand have ever seen one of their bills signed into law unaltered. Former Congressman John Delaney and Beto O'Rourke left Congress without a single one of their bills signed into law. Six other candidates, including Bernie Sanders, who has served 28 years combined in the House of Senate, have managed to pass only one meaningful piece of legislation. I mean, that is very telling right there. When you have 181 years in the federal legislature, and many who have passed not a single piece of legislation, some who have passed only one, and one of those, Bernie Sanders, has been there for 28 years. When you combine the House and the Senate, we're taking your phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. That's why I say it's going to be interesting to see the issues. You know, being anti-Trump is not going to be enough to carry a debate. You've got to distinguish yourself amongst the candidates, some of that style, but also issues, policies. You've got to put that forward. And while people like Elizabeth Warren, they may have a lot of policies to go through, they got to be policies that people can understand, and that you can then answer the follow-up question of, how will you pay for it? That is going to be always the question that gets asked by these big government Democrats, even I think by the CNNs of the world, because American voters want to know, how will this get paid for? Let's go right to the phones in the order of people holding on. Let's make sure Catherine gets a book as well. Catherine, Washington State, on line one. Catherine, thanks for holding on. You're now on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to know if you could clarify how all the polling you're doing is how it's done. Who's being polled? Is it just for the Dems? Is it for, do they poll Republicans also?
Well, so are you talking about the polls on like how you get to the Democrat debate stage? Now, national polling has gotten very difficult because it's people have cell phones. They don't have hard lines. A lot of times, like my cell phone number is a number I've had for a long time. The area code is not where I live anymore. And I would keep that number for probably, you know, the rest of my life. And I think a lot of people like that. So it'd be tough to figure out where I am right now based off just phone number records. I don't have a hard line at home like many Americans my age. But when it comes down to, Than, these Democrat-specific, so national polling, yes, has become very difficult. You get popularity, kind of, but you don't, when you get real specific, it gets very difficult. So you can kind of get a sense of where things are. I think we know our country's pretty divided. But for these debates where polling plays an impact, I'm sure that the polling firm the DNC is using, or the multiple polling firms, are targeting Democrats. Or maybe, are they targeting Democrats and independents, or just Democrats?
targeting Democrats, but here's why it's a great question. I mean, on this broadcast and many others, Jordan, we tend to focus on polling averages for that very reason, because of what the sample looks like can skew it. So it's helpful to average across a number of polls. Now, the DNC is going to do that as well. They're going to average it across three different polls that they're going to use, the last three before the debates. I don't have the whole list of ones that they're going to consider, so I don't know exactly what three they're going to use. But Jordan, here's why it's such a great question. Tom Perez, the chair of the DNC, is essentially picking which polls they use. So even if he says we're averaging it across three polls, he is going to have a huge sway on which polls they use and which ones those favor. So don't look past the personnel inside the party apparatus that is making questions like that. They can have a lot of impact on who ends up on that stage.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, tomorrow on the broadcast, I think, you know, unless some breaking news hits, what we're going to focus in on is moving away from the presidential side, but also the U.S. Senate, where again, a third of the U.S. Senate is up for re-election, and that, of course, plays a significant role. If President Trump is re-elected, is there an opportunity to get more conservatives? You know, it's very slim margins. Is there a chance Republicans could, President Trump could win, and Republicans could lose the Senate? I mean, we're going to talk through that as well. So getting you prepared on something, too, where you're probably more likely getting involved in directly, which is the conservative side of the politics in the U.S. Senate, which, again, all the House seats are open. They'll all be up for re-election, not all open, but up for re-election as they are every 2 years. But the Senate, it's you know, it's staggered, so it's about a third. So we're going to get into that tomorrow on the broadcast, really break that down for you. Let's get back to the phone calls. Let's go to Marlene. Also get Marlene a book, Nevada on Live 5. Marlene, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Well, thank you for taking my call. What all voters need to realize, and they're going to have to ask themselves this question, what have Democrats done to improve your quality of life? And you're not going to be able to answer that. So that this is a good starting question for all your friends when you're talking politics and everything, and maybe they're not Trump supporters. Put that question to them, because I'm in a state that is completely dominated now by Democrats, and they are totally ruining our state. We're getting transplants from California, which did not learn from their errors of their ways in California.
Yeah, it's interesting that they're leaving California to go to a place like Nevada because California, because of the cost of living and the taxes, and then Marlene, they get there and they still vote the same way, and they want, they're going to end up creating another place that they are going to end up leaving if they get their way.
And we don't want Nevada to be California East. So people need to realize this. Learn from your mistakes and ask that question, because Democrats have done nothing to improve the quality of life of anyone in this country. None of them.
Well, I think, listen, there's going to be the base Democrat voters. They care about issues, even if there's nothing that has gotten done. I mean, like, Obamacare was the biggest accomplishment by President Obama. He got a couple of Supreme Court nominees through, mostly replacing liberal justices. So his biggest accomplishment was Obamacare, and it's being undone as we speak and continues to be undone. And if Republicans have bigger victories this time around, so President Trump gets reelected, maybe the House turns back Republican, Senate gets maybe one or two more conservatives, that could be done away with. But, you know, then there's the issue voters. They're always going to vote Democrat because of certain issues, just like there's Republicans who are always going to vote Republican because of certain issues that they care deeply about. Than tomorrow on the broadcast, we're going to break down those Senate races for people. How many senators are up, or Senate seats are up for election in 2020?
Yeah, 34 seats this time around, Jordan, and 22 of them are on the Republican side. So even though I think it's a little bit of an uphill climb for Democrats to take back the Senate, Republicans are defending 10 more seats than the Democrats are. So there is something in play there.
Okay, so we're going to get into that, which is a unique, you know, even if things are going well, maybe on the presidential side, even on the House side, how are things looking on the Senate side as well, that plays such a crucial role, judicial nominees? And, of course, in getting, you know, changing Obamacare. We'll talk about it tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.